Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Totally football show, totally at the World Cup.
History in 40 minutes. I hope you're ready.
Hello, Three Lions. England band not the only one with bomb notes for their Tunisia, but 2 for Kane earns 3 big points for Gareth Southgate's boys. Elsewhere, Belgium find Panama not very taxing. And earlier, Sweden beat South Korea 1-0. Again, the feature to John Woo, but wasn't a thriller. Coming up on Tuesday, continents collide in Group H. Colombia take on Japan. Poland face Senegal. And it's the return of the Russians as they face Egypt. This time, will they set aside Salah? It's totally at the World Cup. Hello, everybody. Day 5 has just concluded. We had a very exciting evening in World Cup land. And to discuss that and more, Carl Anker from the Talking Tactics podcast, the Players Tribune, and all sorts of other places. Nice to have you with us, Carl.
Hello. It's wonderful to be here.
That's great news. Matt Scott's here too.
Gotcha.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hello. And Ian McIntosh as well, who's fresh from quite literally dropping the Totally Football quiz. Ian, what was the best question that you asked at halftime of the England game this evening?
Oh, well, they're all great questions.
Yeah, but
I'm going to go with which nation has lost the most World Cup games?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Isn't it?
All right, well, I think maybe, Carl, you know the answer to this. Matt, I'm guessing you don't.
Stumped our audience for the longest period of
time.
Well,
listeners,
tonight,
if you think you ever ponder on that, we'll return to that topic later on because, of course, we've got to start with England. England finally got their go at doing a World Cup game. And you know that thing when you have like a brilliant April or May, it's really hot and you think, well, I could have an amazing Caribbean summer. And then by, you know, June the 1st, it's pouring with rain. And that was kind of like the game tonight, wasn't it, Carl?
Yes. Started strongly, faded out, and then started well at the end, which is a bit like me in the school year.
Yeah.
Just doing really well. And then a big Christmas release and the video games come out and then I just stop paying attention to my exams.
I see.
And I crammed the last week and I scraped to the end.
The headline news beyond that is the fact that England did beat Tunisia late on with Harry Kane's second, also beating the monumental bit of fate tempting, the promo that the BBC launched of Imagine If England won the World Cup.
A phenomenal amount of hubris.
Yeah, extraordinary. Matt, what happened to England between the first and second halves?
Well, it's not so much what happened to England as what Tunisia did. They sat back and England had a different proposition. In the first half, they'd shown great ambition. They were pressing us right on the edge of our own penalty area, which is what England want, actually. They like to tease the opposition on, play it around and between them, and then hit them fast with accurate passing on the break. But what we saw in the second half was obviously the coach had said, we're vulnerable to this, we're going to get hit again and again. And then we were, England were, I say we if I may, England were completely carving Tunisia open at will very early on. But then they played a bit more savvy, sat back a bit more deeply. And it's the same problem that England have found in qualifying when playing against lesser opposition. But I think it's easy to look at Tunisia as lesser opposition. Actually, they're not. I mean, they're a better team than most of those England faced in qualifying. They will pose problems to other teams. And I'm thinking about Belgium. And you could see from the devastation of their players at the end of the game that they felt that they had a chance of qualification that looks like it's already fallen through their grasp because they've lost that game. They set out to try and not lose that, as so many World Cup teams do in their first World Cup match, and they failed at that hurdle. And the reason was England were too good for them.
What do you think, Ian?
Well, I think it should have been done and dusted in the first half. As you say, England started very, very well.
Probably the best start that I've seen from a team this
World Cup.
Very
pleasing football on the eye, very effective football as well. Probably should have had, well, let's make no bones about it, should have had two penalties. Probably shouldn't have shipped a penalty at the other end. I'm not sure that was one. Raheem Sterling's missed an open goal. We've hit the post. It should have been done and dusted. And then in the second half, the worry was, because, you know, we're listening to this the morning after. Now we've all reflected. We've all got the cheers out of our system. There were some very worrying periods in that second half. Very sort of Sven-Göran Eriksson era England, getting more and more ponderous, starting to run out of ideas. The difference a last-minute goal will make to morale and belief and momentum is obviously seismic, but I wouldn't want to get too excited on the basis of that performance.
Also because, while Matt, you hail Tunisia as a better side than many, they're really not that good, particularly with the holes that were very visible at the back for England. A better side could really hurt Southgate's team.
Oh, yeah. England came to this tournament with some very, very exciting attacking players that hail largely from Manchester City, United, Liverpool and Spurs, but look vulnerable in centre midfield and at central defence. And I think very much the consensus was England will do well in the groups and do fairly decent in the last 16 and then meet your Germany or your Brazil and then be destroyed because we're not really good in centre midfield or defence where these other greater nations are. And I think now we've done the first game, the consensus is we have quite a lot of very exciting young rapid players in the front, but if we get tested in centre midfield or in centre defence, we look vulnerable.
To be fair, in this World Cup so far, only really Russia have looked 100%. And how bizarre is that? But, you know, they stormed it and everybody else has either drawn or struggled their way to a win of the major sides. So if you were to pick out the positives,
as Germany did,
or lost indeed, yeah.
Something I find very interesting is the amount of set-piece goals. So over a third of goals scored in the World Cup so far have been via set-pieces. Mm-hmm. We've seen close to approaching double figures worth of penalties. So loads of goals are happening via set-pieces. But if you look at loads of these games, a lot of these teams are attacking very well, going through wide areas very, very well. But the final through ball or the final cross isn't quite working, which leads me to believe the players haven't quite figured out how the ball works yet.
I think it's a ball issue.
I think it's an acclimatization issue. So, you know, you spend all season working in the Premier League and then you figure out how to hit the ball hard enough to make the cross go in at the right stage. And I think they figured out how to do that when the ball is static.
Yeah.
So all your set pieces and your crosses are going in. I don't think everyone's figured out how to put the right amount of push on a pass for a through ball. I think that's why
Mertens has.
Yes.
Nacho certainly has.
Yes, and yeah. I think those players, the first players to figure out the right amount of pressure and curve to put on the ball when it's moving are going to be the danger teams.
There's a human aspect as well. It's a World Cup. There's a lot of nerves on show. Tonight they're playing through a kind of thin mist of midges, which can't be particularly pleasant when they whoosh up your nose. Overall, it's a good result. It's a better result than Germany got. We'll absolutely take that, but I would counsel against any kind of premature hyperbole.
There were chances where a more confident side could have really caused England problems, no?
England's players at the back have tremendous facility with the ball at their feet. They are able to play the kinds of passes that you look for midfields to play.
Yeah, and it's when the ball's at the other player's feet that I'm just more concerned. There was one episode, and this is the thing, you may well be right, Matt, because we just didn't get much evidence to the contrary, but the one bit that we did get, which was about 15 minutes into the game, when Tunisia eventually kind of wandered lost and helpless upfield and found themselves faced with Stones who didn't really know what to do. And there was, it shouldn't have been a Tunisia opportunity, but all of a sudden two or three Tunisia players had a go at the ball. They couldn't do anything with it, but I wonder what another team might have done. But you may well be right, Matt.
We have a strategic approach now to keep the ball. The tactic we use is this 3-5-2, and we try to tease them on by playing the ball out the back. That's a risk. You're always going to be taking risks like that because, you know, the easiest thing is to lump it upfield, play football that we all lament from the 1970s that was also English. What we're doing now is a far more continental style, and we are taking risks by playing tiki-taka 20 yards from our own goal. We will have teams that will take the ball at those and create those dangerous situations. But I think that the idea is we're going to create more dangerous situations at the other end by playing that way. And from the evidence of Nigeria, Costa Rica, and now tonight, I think that we have done. There's so much to be encouraged by.
We're on course. Maybe not as brilliant as we thought it was going to be in that opening 20 minutes or so, but a very positive night, particularly for one Harry Kane, two goals on his opening World Cup.
Fantastic. Harry Kane is the type of striker who I think the key thing you always have to remember about Harry Kane is Harry Kane believes in the gambler's paradox, which is a very weird mental think where he believes if he takes a shot on goal and it doesn't go in, it makes it more likely that he'll score in his next shot. That is not how football works. That's not how statistics work. That is the lie Harry Kane tells himself to keep shooting and to keep his confidence going. He is a volume shooter. And the great thing that England have and a lot of other of these top footballing sides have that you see as compared to some of the non-European sides is we just have better finishes, which means you've always got a boxer's chance.
To be fair, against better teams, we've talked about better teams, what better teams will do is actually mark Harry Kane when he's 3 yards from goal.
Which is certainly went man-to-man with him on several occasions.
Yeah, but for his two goals, the ball fell to him 3 yards from goal, both occasions exactly the same position, and he scored both times. Of course he did. He's Harry Kane, he's 3 yards from goal, and believe it or not, he's unmarked. I mean, it was just naive.
Yeah, after that second goal, there were Tunisian defenders approaching Sami Kufour levels of frustration with each other. Yes. That they'd just let England's best player have about a six-yard circle around him. There's plenty to be positive about. There's, I would say, still an awful lot to be worried about, but look, they're a decent team, they're a likeable team, they will hopefully get better as the tournament goes on, but I'll maybe just dial back on the 5 minute we've won the World Cup montages just for a bit.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Let's talk then about some of the other things that took place on this Monday. Sweden beat South Korea in Nizhny Novgorod. Gronqvist's penalty there. Sweden's first goal since March, and that drops Germany down to third place in their group. Nobody wants to see that. In Sochi, there was some Sochi football, per Rutulit's expression, from Belgium. Lukaku and Go going sailing through the middle of Panama like there was a great big canal there. 3-0, that. Although that took a bit of time. Should we talk about that?
Yes.
In the Fish Stadium, on the shores of the Black Sea, Panama weren't very good. And Lukaku wasn't. And Carl, you've been speaking to Lukaku, haven't you?
The Players' Tribune have been working very closely with Lukaku and his team ahead of this World Cup. We've just released his story, talking about his amazing debut in the Anderlecht team at the age of 16 years of age, sharing shoes with his dad because he didn't have a pair, couldn't afford a pair of football boots himself.
Can I just say, it's an amazing story. I didn't know it was you that had kind of worked on it. And I was reading it today, and it's remarkable because it's quite difficult sometimes to connect with footballers, but the story that he tells, and you know, with your help, it's so personal. I don't think anyone can read that and not feel very, very deeply touched by. But you know, just really feel, just get an understanding of what drives him.
It was a cumulative group effort of everyone at the team, Players' Tribune. Just Lukaku as a figure is amazing. He talks about how he's their record goalscorer in Belgian football history. He's 25 years old. Wow. He's their record goalscorer. The number two person is already retired. The closest person to catching that record is Eden Hazard, who is something like 16, maybe 10, 16 goals behind.
Wait, he scored, I think, is it 27 goals, international goals, since the start of last year?
Yeah. In his story, he talks about how, for him, every single goal is a final. And when he hits the ball, he hits it with pace and venom. And he's trying, and I quote, "And when I hit the ball, I'm not trying to finesse it. I'm trying to kill you with every single shot." Mm. Which is funny because his first goal was a delightful little dink.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there were some beautiful goals in this and none better, I guess, than Dries Mertens' opener. How about that, Matt?
Oh, sumptuous.
Yeah, that was glorious. What a hit. But also a kind of game that was a mirror image to the England match in that Belgium in the first half, very, very slow, couldn't get things going. And you could almost see, because I believe the Belgians aren't particularly shy in the dressing room with their feelings towards the tactical system. Mm. But you could see the players kind of twitching with frustration. I'd imagine there were a few full and frank exchanges of views in the dressing room. So they needed that goal.
The players weren't the only ones. Daniel Story over on Football 365, shaken, not stirred by Martinez. Martinez chose to use three central defenders against a team who barely attempted to attack. Martinez chose Yannick Carrasco as a left wing back when he's so obviously weak in that role. Martinez asked Kevin De Bruyne to collect the ball from the defenders, leaving him 70 yards from goal. Martinez picked Axel Witsel as a screen for a defence that needed no screening. And the list goes on. A convincing scoreline, but not in terms of the manager's tactics.
When you talk about midfields that are prone to be overrun, that's Belgium's. I mean, they're playing two in the middle.
And we're playing one.
Well, yeah, basically, because they've got so many attacking players. I mean, this is...
Well, according to Daniel, that was one too many, though.
well, against Panama, perhaps. But what I'm saying is, you know, we're talking this fantasy, what happens when they meet a better team. And
yeah,
they will do when they play England. England are demonstrably a better team than the others in the group. I think they're going to have problems against England. They will be outnumbered in that midfield area. England, you know, they are playing a numbers game with a five-man midfield.
Play a mental game here. Imagine that you're from neither Belgium nor England, and you see those two games back to back. Which team do you think looks more dangerous?
Belgium, because they have slightly sharper attacking players.
Do they?
Yeah. When you've got Eden Hazard, Dries Mertens, and Romelu Lukaku, you've got a slightly better puncher's chance than Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling, and Jesse Lingard.
They've got better finishers. I'd agree with that. I don't think they're sharper. They're always going to be an out ball for England. Always.
There's always an out ball for Belgium when you have Romelu Lukaku and Eden Hazard.
I don't disagree.
Eden Hazard running against John Stones. I don't like that.
That's why Kyle Walker's...
If you're Germany, who do you want to face, England or Belgium?
On the basis of that first game, probably Belgium. I'd say there's more gaps and vulnerabilities.
And if you're picking a fantasy team, who would you have up front, Lukaku or Kane?
I actually do have Lukaku.
Right. Just returning to your Players' Tribune piece there, you had about, 4 hours with him or so? 4 or 5 hours?
We did.
And what was the juiciest bit that you left out?
It involves his time working Roberto Martinez at Everton.
Oh, yeah.
We also have a piece of Roberto Martinez.
Right.
Where he... Roberto Martinez...
What was so juicy about the bit from Lukaku about Roberto Martinez?
They just really enjoy each other. They just really do, which I think is nice. Roberto Martinez thinks, you know, Roberto Martinez's line is, you know, I put a lot of my Everton eggs into the Lukaku basket when I bought him for 28 million.
Yeah.
And thank goodness it paid off. And I think Lukaku understands that and is very much, thanks, Bobby. Thanks for buying me and giving me a full season playing for Everton.
So okay.
They get on for now.
Okay. You've also done pieces with Raheem Sterling.
Yes.
He's certainly a man in a fascinating situation, not necessarily in an enjoyably fascinating one for him. But I'm curious to know what he was like talking to. Is he an interesting guy? Is he a thoughtful guy? What's he make of his current situation in terms of the way the media are treating him?
He's very charismatic, very funny, charming young man who's, you know, had a very hard upbringing and tough life experiences, and it's made him the man he is today. And I think his approach is, you know, I've been through all these bad things in my life and I've come out stronger, so, you know, if so-and-so newspaper wants to say stuff to me, I'll get through this as well.
Okay.
He also loves bounty bars, which I think is charming.
All right. Shame he didn't get a tattoo of those, eh, Carl? Do you still get two types of bounty?
Yeah, dark chocolate bounty and milk chocolate bounty.
All right.
Definitely.
It's all about dark chocolate.
Well, hopefully that Sterling piece is coming out soon. Have we talked enough about Belgium-Panama, Carl?
No, because I'm still very confused as to what Belgium are supposed to be.
All right.
They feel very England. They feel very last golden generation England. They feel very much, we have an abundance of very, very talented players all playing in similar positions and a manager that is very, very smart and eloquent. And we have no idea if we're good or bad. And I don't know if we're going to figure out if this Belgium side are good or great or bad.
Is the problem with Belgium that they actually do think they're really good? When you watch England start, it just seemed like so direct and so immediate and efficient compared to the way that Belgium were playing their football.
That's
worrying problem for Belgium is this is not a selection of players that have all come through an academy like Clairefontaine or through the German system. This is a group of players that through sheer luck have all come to their mid to late 20s at the same age. So it very much feels like you have to get this done now because you're a nation of 11 million. And if you don't win anything with these players, we don't know where the next batch is coming from.
Yeah,
that's true. England found their players a lot more quickly. We talk about ponderous build-ups. That's exactly what you had with them. They don't have the natural width. It seemed to be more forced the way they did it. And still, they didn't find the wide players. And I think that's got to be a concern because England's players are coming deep to find the ball. Whereas with the Belgian team, you know, when they're faced with numbers, England, that's what I mean, you know, when we've allowed the other team to come on. When you're playing against the Belgian team, or when the Belgian team were playing, they were very much further up the pitch and still knocking it around in front of each other, not really passing for passing's sake. And the point is penetration. And I think that's a characteristic of Roberto Martinez's management. Wherever he's been, he plays possession football without necessarily playing penetrating football.
Tell you what we do know, Matt. Panama are really bobbins. And it was kind of a day of...
One or two decent ones. I liked the look of Murillo, the New York Red Bulls right back. I thought he was all right. Torres did that wonderful interception.
Oh, yeah, he was quite fun, wasn't he?
Yeah, the lion-maned Torres.
They're not going quietly into the night, are they?
No.
They're slamming into challenges left, right,
although
and centre.
Although Belgium, it was almost as if they decided to kind of meet them halfway with this. But if you're USA watching this, that could have been us. And equally, if you're Italy watching Sweden in their match, segueing neatly into the earlier game today, against South Korea, you think, oh, my
USA God. USA should have won their games then, shouldn't they?
Well, they should have. But, for Italy. What about Sweden then? Is there?
I would go out on a limb here and say that from Sweden, South Korea, we haven't seen contenders for the latter stages of this tournament. Sweden were fine. They were solid. They did what they do. Marcus Berg had a couple of nice touches and they, like so many people, won the game with a penalty after some VAR. South Korea, not their finest vintage. I felt a bit sorry for Son Heung-min, who is, of course, this is the beginning of his campaign to avoid national service. South Korea, I think, have to get into the last four of something.
It's the Asian Cup, I think, that's specifically...
The Asian Cup's probably the better target.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they're doing it here. But at one point, towards the back end of the first half, I think, Son Heung-min went on this coruscating 60-yard run down the right flank and then looked up, and there's no one there. Very much a metaphor for his role in that team.
Carl Bergwer says, Aloha crew, love the new show. In case you might be interested, Sweden had more shots on goal in the first half of the game with South Korea than during the entire Euro 2016 campaign. That's remarkable.
Do you know what Sweden reminded me of? Was the Eriksson Capello vintage England. So 4-4-2. Lustig putting the ball in from the right, just like David Beckham. You know, Celtic's Michael Lustig really does have a good little cross on him, but just so ineffective, actually, and not equipped to go forward and advance in the tournament.
Does every team remind you of a different era of England?
Absolutely.
It's the World Cup of Rorschach test.
Yeah.
The one that I like about this England
is it reminds me of 1930s England, which was the WM formation, and we were world beaters then. So.
Every England World Cup squad is a direct response to the previous England World Cup squad.
Is that right?
I've just made that theory up now.
We'll
test it.
The manager is.
We swing from hot to cold, from hot to cold, from hot to cold. We want a bit of a character, a bit of a shout, a bit of passion. Then we don't. We want sensible. Sensible and considered.
Well, so which is Southgate? He's sensible and considered.
No, he's the young man to Roy's old man.
Right. Okay. With Big Sam, of course, in between. How does that fit into that?
Such a blink of an eye, wasn't it?
Are you daring to dream? Just to finish off on all this Monday business, are you daring to dream, Matt?
Look, if England have more luck with referees than they did tonight, you definitely need luck with refereeing. You need luck with the decisions if you're going to advance in the tournament. I think that as they develop together, they're young boys, they get more cohesion. I think there's a good deal of cohesion in that team, and that's something that you don't often get from international teams. I don't see the cliques that so many international teams have been riven by, including England in the past.
Yeah,
I think that there's a bit of a club mentality in that regard, and there are many things to believe. With a bit of luck, I don't see Germany as being particularly strong. I think the performance we saw the other night was the one that I've been expecting. Brazil are a decent side. I think England can win things, definitely. Euro 2020, not this one.
One thing that Rio Ferdinand was saying recently was about how his England team effectively never got anywhere because the players were too embedded with that whole Man United v Chelsea, Man United v Liverpool mentality that, for example, when he sat down across a breakfast table from Steven Gerrard, they couldn't even speak to each other, which is extraordinary. That doesn't seem to be a problem with this England. Is that the case with Belgium, given their club allegiances?
Yes, 4 years ago. We now know for a fact 4 years ago there was disruption between the Flemish-speaking Belgian players and the players of African descent.
Okay.
Francophone, similar to how the alleged problems with the Dutch team of 1996.
Okay.
Melting pot nations have problems with people meeting eye to eye in football clubs. Dutch teams always had problems because every single Dutch player who rocked up was the best player on their team since the age of four.
Right.
This seems good. Southgate seems to have created a really good balance. Everyone seems likable.
Sun, sea, sand and football. Watching the World Cup on holiday sounds like paradise. Until you try watching a game online and realise seconds before kickoff that it's blocked. Well, instead of bemoaning your decision to book a trip during a tournament that comes around once every 4 years, you need to get yourself a virtual private network from bestvpn.com. and you'll be able to access the internet freely wherever you are this summer, all for less than the price of a pint. Because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can get 70% off a VPN by visiting bestvpn.com/podcast. BestVPN.com will set you up with a VPN in minutes so you can watch the football from your deck chair or by the pool. And when it comes to security, BestVPN.com will also protect your internet activity from prying eyes on open Wi-Fi networks. No matter where you are in the world, you can access your online home comforts with a VPN. So unlock the internet today with BestVPN.com. Find out more and get 70% off by heading to BestVPN.com/podcast.
World Cup news. We've had our first player sent home. Nikola Kalinic told to do one from Croatia after refusing to come on during the Nigeria win. That's not good, is it?
Fair play. I'd have done anything I could to get out of watching it.
coming up on Tuesday, everybody. Colombia take on Japan in the enticingly named Mordovia Arena. That's in Saransk. City of Saransk is named after a muddy river. Poland, meanwhile, will be taking on Senegal, also from Group H. That's in the altogether more racy-sounding Spartak Stadium in Moscow. And then, with that, we've had a game from everybody at the World Cup. We go all the way back to the start as Russia attempt to become the first team into the second round against Egypt in St. Petersburg. We'll get more from Sasha Gurionov on that game a little bit later on. Because first of all, when we look at Tuesday's action, let's talk about, in this World Cup, the most worldly of all the groups, Group H, four continents involved here. Really zero idea of what's going to happen. But, of course, England fans, potential England last 16 opponents, come from this group. Who's going to be doing what, where and how, Ian?
God knows.
Right.
If you listen to the previews, you remember that I said this would probably be the best group. And all my other predictions have come perfectly true. So it should be absolutely fine.
There's so much that could happen. So many great players involved as well in this
group.
Honestly,
you could toss all four names up in the air and then just where they land is where they finish. They're so evenly matched.
Even Japan?
Well, the funny thing about Japan is that they've had these, because they had that very late managerial change, and then they've had these friendlies where they've been desperately trying to get into or get back to playing this passing football game. And against Ghana, they were beaten 2-0 at home, but they played very well. So it's a question of how much they've been able to take in, how much cohesion they've been able to bring, because they're a decent technical side.
Mm. Look, if I could just say, out of the last 24 games involving all of those four teams, so you're looking at the last six form on each of them, they've had six wins between them.
All four teams have
mustered six wins between them. Oh. Games. By contrast, England's group have won 15 out of their last 24 between them.
How about that? Good
it's
Lord.
Going to be very interesting because all these sides are evenly matched and also are easily vulnerable to each other and their styles of play.
And of course, the one team that you might put slightly above the rest, Colombia, who did so well in 2014, didn't have actually a great qualifying campaign, but it looks like James Rodriguez might miss out.
Well, he might not. Yeah, stay tuned. Keep across news sources, listeners, because some folks say he will be there, and he's so key, of course, isn't he? Golden Boot, wasn't he? In the last World Cup.
Six goals.
Outstanding player of the tournament.
Of course, they do have Falcao ready to make...
Returning Falcao, which is...
Yeah, but this is the first time he's ever been at the World Cup.
He's back from the ACL injury that meant he missed out in 2014. Some would say Colombia were better at 2014 because they didn't have all their play channeled through Falcao. London listeners, be close to Elephant and Castle for a Colombia game.
Yeah. What's happening there?
That's where the largest Colombian grouping
diaspora
exists in London.
The 343 bus it's got a lot of
it's during the World Cup.
It's fantastic. I'm very excited to watch Colombia play football.
Well, it's Colombia that Japan take on first, which is interesting because that's the last game that Japan had at the World Cup. It was back in Brazil and they got beaten, 4-1?
Yeah.
By the Cafeteros. Now, listeners, you might think, I bet they don't know too much about Japan, and you'd be right. But we know a man who does, and he is Ben Maxwell, who's a host, indeed, of the J-Talk podcast. And he gave us a quick heads up on some of the players from Samurai Blue to look out for.
Well, you'll definitely notice Yuto Nagatomo of Galatasaray and his dyed blonde hair are zipping up and down the left touchline from his fullback position. Further forward, I always smirked when reading various World Cup previews, seeing Keisuke Honda and Shinji Kagawa listed as Japan's key players, as they were basically being phased out under Halil Hodžić. But I think the joke's on me, because it looks like Ishino will be relying on at least Honda and possibly Kagawa as well. So they're obviously very well-known players abroad. They were doubtful to even make the squad, I would have said, under Halil Hodžić. But Nishino, some say under pressure from some of the JFA's major sponsors, has handed Honda and Kagawa spots in his squad. So you would likely see at least Honda and possibly Kagawa as well after his goal in the last friendly against Paraguay from the start. For something a little bit different, though, rather than just saying Honda and Kagawa again, I'll say Genki Haraguchi. He helped Fortuna Dusseldorf get promoted to the Bundesliga last season, and he's joining Hannover in the Bundesliga for the next campaign. He's likely to start on the right of midfield. A good engine, possibly a good link up with Yuya Osako, who will probably play up front. So, yeah, let's say Haraguchi from an attacking perspective.
Unbelievable, unbelievable this. Yes, yes, yes.
Right, Japan. Well, I'm even more excited to see them now at the Mordovia Arena in Saransk. And I really hope that Hammers is playing. But
they've got a decent spine, Colombia.
Yeah?
Yeah, they do, yeah. I mean, the goalkeeper's okay.
Ospina?
No, he's not the worst. He's okay. I mean, I'm just saying he's okay. I'm not going wild.
He's very much enjoyed by Colombian fans, despite the fact that a goalkeeping mistake essentially gifted Peru qualifying into the World Cup. He's not Dustbin Dave to Colombian fans as he is to Arsenal fans.
No, indeed.
Something that's really interesting with Colombia is how they've essentially had
Dustbin Dave.
Dustbin Dave is what some Arsenal fans call Ospina.
Because he's rubbish.
And he also apparently looks like a bin man. The point about Colombia I find very interesting is that Colombia is going through the reverse of what England is going through in terms of their player profiles. So previously England were known for making very, very large, stout, rugged centre-backs. Uh-huh. And now this England team is very much having slightly smaller, flightier, rapid inside forwards. Whereas now Colombia, previously known for very, very creative number 10s, inside forwards and strikers, are now being known for having really strong, rugged centre-backs. Davinson Sanchez is one of the most, you know, talented young centre-backs playing in Europe today.
Okay. Well, anyway, so he'll probably be up to it against Japan. Meanwhile, in that group, a little bit later on, it's Poland-Senegal. Now, you were saying Colombia are the side that's probably the favourites in this group, but you can make a strong case for Senegal, who've got some really, I mean, talk about a good spine for Colombia. Senegal's spine looks really good.
Senegal's my pick to be the farthest reaching African nation.
Okay.
Something that really stuck out to me in the Champions League final defeat for Liverpool was how Mane, once Salah went off, Mane essentially boxer gloves. All right, I'm going to take this game with a scruff of the neck and remind you all I'm one of the best players in Europe.
He's a big game player, Carl.
He definitely is. To use the term, he wants it.
He wants it. And then behind him, you've got Gay. Koulibaly at the back. He's a rock. Bang.
They're my pick to finish second in this group. And
second. So who do you have top?
I think Colombia, providing James is fit, will go first.
Because we've got to figure Poland into this conversation, surely. They've got Lewandowski. Yep.
They've got old Lewandowski.
The guy's still...
Old Piszczek, old Blazikowski.
They're old.
Zielinski from Napoli,
really?
He's a good player.
Zielinski's a good player. Yeah. They would have Arkadiusz Milik, who's, if he hadn't just gone and injured himself. I'm not saying he's injury prone, but he went to visit the Dolphinarium in Sochi and fell over on a puddle.
Oh no.
He hurt his hand.
Because he got injured last time, didn't he?
He's always injured, poor chap.
It's a hand. Yeah. Surely he can play with a bad hand.
Are you not going to make your joke about spilt milk?
Goalkeeper.
Glick's got injured as well, doing a bicycle kick.
Well, that's worse.
It's almost as if having two clairvoyant animals is somehow angered the footballing gods.
Because they've got an elephant and they've got a penguin.
Glick is head and shoulders their best defender. I mean, he's he's a good player.
Anyway,
but
so...
I still see them coming out of that group. I actually think Senegal will miss out. Personally.
This game is going to be huge then, Poland taking on Senegal.
Poland, when we were talking about six wins in this group, three of them were for Poland. So they're the informed side.
Okay.
So if you're
well, that's interesting, isn't it? Ian, did you know that Lewandowski has been celebrated by his nation with a commemorative stamp for these World Cup finals with his face on it, 6 zloty each. Wouldn't it be nice if he put one on a postage stamp?
Zlotted at home.
Zlotted at home, Ian. Off the post, perhaps, because it's a stamp. Yeah, we'll move on.
It's a real treat being here.
So it's been magical discussing Group H. And it does look wide open. As you might expect, a quartet featuring a team from Africa, a team from South America, a team from Europe, and a team from Asia to be. But by tomorrow evening, we'll know how the opening games have gone. We'll also know what's whether Russia can follow up that extraordinary start. The evening game sees the team that's had the best results so far have a go at doing it again, and unbelievably, it is Russia. This is going to be at the St. Petersburg Stadium. They're taking on Egypt.
Do we expect Salah to play?
Well,
he didn't even get off the bench, did he?
He has to.
He must.
He must. Now, nobody was more shocked about Russia's brilliant 5-0 win in their opening game than Sasha Gurionov, who you recall was a little bit down on their chances. How's he feeling now about this match? Well, producer Ben caught up with him a short time ago, and Sasha did a funny early on.
It wasn't just me who was taken by surprise. I think everyone in Russia was. Okay, Saudi Arabia won great shakes, so I possibly doesn't really say much about the strengths of this Russian team. The fact that they managed to beat these guys 5-0. But the way they did it and the way that the midfield functioned for the first time in a very, very long time was certainly very encouraging. What is very important now is that the atmosphere around the team lifted because basically going into that first match, everything was so negative, including myself. Players from the Russian national team were actually kicking off against the media saying, look, guys, we need more support. Artem Dzyuba came out with sort of that statement. In return, some Russian journalists sort of bit back saying, well, if you're a bit nicer, more approachable and generally easier to deal with, maybe it would be nicer. I mean, it was sort of reminiscent of 2014. And back in 2014, Russia started poorly with that draw against South Korea. I can fear a mistake and things only went downhill. Whereas this time, this 5-0 win basically got the country massively excited. But I think it has to be recognized that Saudi Arabia didn't bring anything to the party. But what we saw against Saudi Arabia perhaps is what we're going to see against Egypt. Because what Russia did is they said, Saudi Arabia, you want to play football? Go on, have the ball, see what you can do. And basically, as soon as Saudi Arabia got the ball in their own half, they got rushed. And the whole thing of breaking up the play. Another thing that the Russians did very well, of course, was use the fact that the Saudis were very poor in the air, as we saw in the first and the third goal. Now, I don't think this Egypt would have this problem, given that they have Higazi at centre-back. However, Egypt would have a problem when it comes to playing football. Because if you look at Egypt, even with Salah playing, they're essentially a counter-attacking team. They'd like the other team to have the ball. But the game against Russia is going to be one that they need to win. So I think it would suit the Russians to basically try to force Egyptians to play football, then rush them, perhaps use the breakdown in play, and try to score from that. So I think at the moment, looking at tomorrow's match, it seems that Russia are holding the cards.
And what about the team news, Sash? Cheryshev came off the bench, scored twice. Dzyuba also came off the bench, he scored. He's a big man. Are there going to be any changes to the starting lineup?
So Cheryshev should keep his place in the team after coming on so successfully for Dzagoev, who has been perhaps ruled out until the second round, if Russia do get through. However, there's questions about the striker, because I think something that sort of slightly went under the radar is the fact that Smolov actually had an appalling game against Saudi Arabia. He basically spent too much time on the ball. There were random flicks that didn't lead to anything. And, of course, Dzyuba was much more clinical when he came on, you know, making an impact almost immediately. Cherchesov was asked this question today in the press conference, and he didn't really give an answer. Personally, I think I should probably stick with Smolov for now. I think in terms of, despite the fact that he didn't have the greatest of games, I think the movement of the front six was actually pretty good. So I think I'd go with him. So basically, it's the team that was on the pitch after Dzagoev came off injured. I think that should be the starting lineup against Egypt.
And Sash, of course, you're a huge Liverpool fan. Will you have mixed feelings to see Mohamed Salah play tomorrow?
I think I'll be absolutely fine if he scores. To be honest, I think as any club fan, you want your players to return from World Cups without any injuries. So I hope he doesn't do himself any further damage. Interestingly, today, Cherchesov was asked whether anyone in his team was prepared to do a Ramos. Of course, he diplomatically declined to answer that question. But I think that this for Egypt, for Egyptian fans, you know, it's Salah makes almost 99% difference whether they can look at this game with optimism or not. And indeed, you know, a half-fit Salah can cause that Russian backline problems. I mean, that Russian backline had a few issues even against Saudi Arabia, despite coming under no pressure whatsoever. So I think while Salah is on the pitch, Egypt have hope, But the way things stand, Russia only needing a draw, I think they're actually in a pretty decent position.
What do you think? Russia going to be the first team to qualify for the second round?
Ian? No. I'm still... I know they've just won 5-0, but Saudi Arabia was so bad. I don't want to read too much into that. I reckon Egypt might get back into it here.
Wow.
I like Russia. I think Dzagaev's a big, big miss. I think, you know, everybody was talking about Golovin before the tournament, but Dzagaev is every bit the player that he is.
But Golovin the star, though, very much of that.
Oh, of that game, yeah. But Dzagaev is that good that he, you know, he's a huge miss from the centre of midfield.
But Cheryshev, who came on for him, looked fantastic to him.
Completely different player, though.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, he was absolutely spectacular.
But all of a sudden, it seems like they've got loads of options. Or maybe Saudi Arabia just really, really bad.
They were.
Of course they are.
They broke, well, the expected goals model had Russia pitched to score 2 goals.
Oh.
Which is a testament to how bad Saudi Arabia's centre-backs and goalkeeper are.
Okay.
Essentially, if you have a shot on goal against Saudi Arabia, you have a chance of scoring.
Right. Even if you don't have a shot on goal,
you're
probably going to score.
Deflections work too.
Russia have already scored more goals in this tournament than they did in both 2014 and 2002, their last two appearances at the World Cup. That's remarkable.
Yeah, but they've got some good finishes in there. I mean, Dzhuba, that header that he did was right behind him. Good goal. Fedor Smolov is a very good player as well.
All of a sudden, Russia are full of good players.
They're full of very fit players. They're very fit. They're very athletic. They do a lot of hard running, which in a World Cup, that's very important.
I'm not having it yet.
No?
No.
Tell you one thing that might swing your mind on this. The pressure in this game is all on Egypt. Russia can afford to sit back, much as they did with Saudi Arabia, and just pick off the Egyptians on the break.
I fancy them.
A result here, a win here, and they are through to the last 16. We're only about 6 days into the tournament.
It's usually how long it takes for England to go out. How times have changed.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, hopefully Salah's going to be back.
Just one final little statoid. This is the first time England have won the opening game of their tournament in 6 times of asking.
Really? In the last 6 tournaments?
Remember the last one? It was against Tunisia, 1998.
Oh, yeah. I was there, actually, in Marseille.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. I was, you know, mixing it up, getting a bit tasty, lobbing chairs.
I did that a couple of years ago.
Good times.
I was 7 years old.
Were you, Carl?
And I was listening to it on the radio at school. And
at school?
At school. I was seven.
Yeah, but it took place in the evening, didn't it, that game?
No. Middle of the afternoon.
Was it?
Des Lynham.
It was near
Billwork.
Yes.
It was the fighting that began in the evening.
Right. Okay, now, very shortly we'll get the answer to Ian's exciting question. Remember that, listeners? A lifetime ago at the start of this. Before that, producer Ben's only been speaking to Paddy Power again, getting all the odds on Tuesday's games. Let's find out what they said.
Thanks, Jimbo. Lee Price, you're here. You never leave.
Yeah, there's free drinks in the green room and there's nice company, so why would I go home?
Well, it's so nice that you commute all the way in each day. Listen, we got football to talk about. Tomorrow is Colombia versus Japan. This could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I like both of these squads. Japan have been written off a bit, but they've got some lovely players in their team. They're 9-2 to win this one, with Kagawa 9-1 to score first, which tempts me. The draw's 5-2, and Colombia, as you might expect, are odds-on favourites to win this, 4-6. James to score first, 11-2. He does shine at World Cups.
Elsewhere in that group, it's Poland versus Senegal. I think this is less interesting. I think other people will disagree with me. What's going on here?
Well, this is interesting for England because this is the match between two teams we could play in the next round if we win the group. It's Poland are at 13-10 to win this fixture. The draw is 21-10. Senegal were 23-10. They could be really interested in this tournament, I think.
And Lee, let's whiz back over to Group A because the second round of games are taking place in the group. It's Russia versus Egypt. What's going on in this one?
Yeah, this could be pivotal. Egypt are even money to win this fixture. Russia are 3-1. The draw is 11-5.
And tell me what's going to happen if Russia score a goal.
If they score, I will celebrate because Paddy Power are donating £10,000 for every Russian goal this World Cup to LGBT charities via Attitude Magazine's foundation. So that means that whether they like it or not, Russia are directly funding LGBT football and tackling homophobia.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Ian, you asked... What did you ask again?
I asked which team had lost the most World Cup games, which is a tricky one because you've got to be in a lot of World Cups to lose a lot of World
Cups. Got to
be in
it to lose it in the time-honoured phrase.
Who always goes out in the knockout stages?
England.
Mexico.
Italy.
And also England. But in this case, Mexico.
Oh, it's Mexico.
Yeah, the answer was Mexico.
They've lost more World Cup games
more
than
World Cup
any
games
other team.
Anyone else? That question.
And yet they beat Germany.
That question.
Go figure.
From Opta.
Right.
If you fancy a bit more like that, look out for our quiz on Sunday when England play Panama.
Brilliant. Another England quiz coming. Well, make sure that you find us on Facebook for all sorts of videos, quizzes and competitions and stuff. We're also available via the medium of Twitter at The Totally Show. We'll be back tomorrow evening, so get your questions and comments in for that. If there's anything you want to talk about. For now, I say thank you to Ian McIntosh, to Carl Anker and to you, Matt Scott.
Thank you.
And you, listener.
We got around the back. We protected and we attacked and we also got around the back.
Are you doing a World in Motion
team? We chose to do it at the right time.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Listeners, I'll deal with this. You go off and have a good time. Catch up with you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. Subscribe now and get the latest episode delivered right to your phone for free. Supporting your team at the World Cup can be a phenomenal experience. But then Beckham boots Simeone, Lampard's goal isn't given, or someone puts on an England shirt and misses a penalty. The highs, more often than not, come with lows. And that's a little bit like life, really. So while we're all supposed to be buzzing with World Cup excitement and lapping up all this football, all that VAR and all those Nigeria kits, remember that someone close to you might be going through one of life's tougher times. Every day, on average, 12 men take their own life in the UK. That's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. Scary, huh? But that's part of the problem. Many of us still feel mental health and suicide are taboo topics, and this can stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it most. That's why we're working with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. We here at The Totally Football Show believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the ups and the downs, the glorious wins and the embarrassing red cards, the good days and the bad. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provides a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website which is packed with the kind of info you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough one. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.